I wasn't finished playing with you yet!
Listen to me. He's
gonna kill us.
No, no. We're not gonna die. We're not gonna die. Run! Run!
Is there evil? I've done a lot of looking into what evil means, and evil is the wickedness of man. When we allow our desires and our selfish lust to take over what we want to do, that is basically the definition of evil.
Logan is about 35 miles southeast of Columbus, Ohio.
Once a thriving coal mining town in the foothills of Appalachia, its golden era lost its shine decades ago when the mines shut down and the economy collapsed.
You have to want to go to Logan to be there anymore.
But Todd Schultz and Annette Cooper were both born and bred here. And like a lot of teenagers, especially when they're in love, they're looking for a way out of their small town. Todd's the second oldest of four from a well-known and well-respected family in Logan.
My brother, Todd, was 19, and he'd been out of high school a little over a year. He'd gone to work for a printing company in Logan. He was also a volunteer firefighter.
Todd, stop it. Seriously.
Annette was going to Hocking College. She was doing very well there in the computer programming industry, and she was looking to further her education either at Ohio University in Lancaster or possibly going to Ohio State University.
While Todd's family is very close, Annette's is equally fractured. The oldest of two daughters, she comes from a broken home on the outskirts of Logan.
If I do well on this, mm-hmm. get all of my credits for transfer,
yeah.
we could rent ourselves a little apartment near campus.
What? You just don't love living with my parents and my brother?
Well, it's a lot better than living with my stepdad, that's for sure.
Todd and Annette were both living with his family on the west side of Logan. It was at the request of Todd, basically, because Todd knew of some allegations of sexual abuse by her stepfather, Dale Johnston, and Todd did not want to see his girlfriend in that type of an environment.
I cannot wait to have some privacy. Get out of here, live how we want to live. Todd, stop. I heard something.
Hello? Hey, who's out there? It's getting late. I gotta pick up Eric from soccer practice. Let's get out of here, all right?
Todd that evening was supposed to take his younger brother to a soccer practice, and then later at 6:30 he had a meeting for the volunteer fire department.
Todd?
Todd did not come home. Totally out of character.
Hi, Mom. Hi. Have you seen Todd today?
My mom called every relative we could think of to ask around, see if anyone had seen them or had any clue of where they might have been.
Okay. No, I'll keep calling. Love you. Bye.
No one has seen Todd or Annette since yesterday afternoon, including Annette's parents, who are now just as worried as Todd's family.
My mom had a gut intuition that something bad had happened, something tragic had happened to them.
I want to report a missing person. It's my son and his girlfriend.
People don't often go missing in Logan, Ohio. People don't even lock their doors. So after 24 hours with no trace of Todd and Annette, local law enforcement isn't quite sure what to make of it. They reach out to Todd's parents for more information.
Can you describe what your son was wearing when you last saw him?
Blue jeans and a t-shirt.
Ma'am, would it be possible if the two perhaps, you know, ran off together, eloped?
And left all their clothes? Their toothbrushes? Keys to the car? No, I don't think that's what happened. I'm telling you, something happened to them. Something bad. Todd has never run off in his life. He doesn't drink or do drugs. He's a wonderful, wonderful boy.
Ma'am, do you know of anyone that might have wanted to hurt them?
Why don't you go on over to Dale Johnston's place? Ask him if he knows anyone who would want to hurt Annette.
I know my mom was not shy about mentioning why Annette was living with us. The rumors that Annette had been molested.
Dale Johnston?
That's right.
Not too many people knew too much about Dale Johnston. He wasn't bred and born in Logan, Ohio, so he was sort of considered an outcast even when he was living there.
Sir, I'm looking for Todd and Annette. They didn't come home last night, and the Schultzes are worried. You seen the kids? Heard from them?
Dale didn't seem as concerned about the missings as the rest of the Schultz family, as well as the rest of the Johnston family.
It was not the behavior of someone who wanted to cooperate in finding my brother and Annette. That was the behavior of somebody who was being very suspicious.
Sir, I'm just trying to locate Todd and Annette. I know that she moved out.
I haven't seen either one of them. I haven't heard anything from them either. But deputy, the next time you plan on coming to my property, you call.
Todd and Annette don't show up that day or the next. By that point, everyone in town knows they're missing, and they're all looking for them. In the woods, on the farms, and along the Hocking River that runs right through town. But there's no sign of them anywhere.
Todd! Annette!
Daily it was in the paper. Can remember people talking about it, wondering where they were at.
10 more days go by. Then, on the banks of the Hocking River, as one mystery comes to a close, another far more terrifying chapter is just beginning.
God in heaven.
Command, this is Jacobs. I'm on the river past the bridge. I think I found something.
Roger that. Should we send somebody?
Send everyone.
Ten 10 days after teenage sweethearts Todd Schultz and Annette Cooper go missing from a tiny town in southern Ohio.
Todd! Annette!
A rookie deputy makes a horrific discovery.
Oh, God in heaven.
He found the body basically from the legs up and from the neck down with no arms.
Just a torso. And then just a short time later, they found a second torso a little bit down the river, a little bit closer to the trestle bridge.
Investigators can only assume the torsos belong to missing teens, Todd and Annette. Now, the search is on for the rest of their bodies.
Okay, listen up. Keep your eyes open for anything. And, well, anybody.
It's not long before another deputy makes another discovery, even more gruesome than the last. Just a few hundred feet from where the torsos were discovered.
Station Command. Station Command, I think we've got something.
Our understanding, what they found was 6 or 7 shallow graves that someone had dug to bury the body parts in. And through further digging, they eventually found the heads. It's worse than a horror movie because it's real.
After breaking the news to Todd and Annette's devastated families, investigators start the search for the person or persons responsible for the grisly killings.
Who would do something like this? Why?
I wish I could tell you why. I can only tell you how.
The coroner determined that both Todd and Annette's cause of death was from a double gunshot wound to the head. The dismemberment came afterwards.
All right, bag this up, take it out to the lab.
Murder is rare in Logan, Ohio. Dismemberment? Unheard of.
Nobody involved in this case had ever seen anything like this.
It turned Logan on its ear. We didn't know who did this. We didn't know why. Could it have been just in Logan? Was it someone in the area who was passing through, who just came across Todd and Annette?
The local sheriff's department is overwhelmed by the magnitude of the case.
Yes, ma'am. We're doing everything we can. I'll pass this along.
People were saying that they're sleeping with baseball bats under their beds, and they were sticking a knife on the inside of the door.
Phones ring off the hook, with panicked citizens offering their opinions on who was capable of committing such horror.
He'd been bleeding? Where was he cut? Uh-huh. Okay, I will pass this on to a detective and someone will get back to you. When? Soon.
Despite countless calls and hundreds of leads, nothing sticks.
The longer it took with no results, I think the more rumors started and the more panicked the whole town became, to the point where I think people were afraid to let their children out and play for the mere fact that they may come up missing like Todd and Annette did.
When the investigation lags on for months, the people of Logan pour on the pressure to make an arrest. The cops need a break. And soon, they get it. A big one. Almost 3 weeks after the killings, a local man comes forward.
Thanks for coming in, Steve.
He tells police he thought he saw Todd and Annette in downtown Logan on the day they went missing.
Please, have a seat.
He swears they weren't alone. He's just not sure who they were with. Now, months after the murders, investigators will try anything to jog his memory, even hypnosis.
They took that individual and actually had him hypnotized to try to get a clearer picture of what he actually saw that night. Sometimes under hypnosis, they can give a more definitive answer.
Stephen, I'm afraid I have to warn you that you may experience very intense visions or memories. Lean into them. Do not try to make them go away. Stephen, I want you to close your eyes and relax. Let go of everything but the sound of my voice. I'm going to count backwards from 10. When I reach 1, you will have entered a state of deep relaxation. 10. 9. 8. 1. Stephen, I want you to think about what it is that you saw. I want you to speak out loud about what you saw. What you saw in Logan.
There was a man. Tall. Angry. There's a young man. The girl is upset. She doesn't want to go. She doesn't want to get in the truck, but he's forcing her in. He can't help her.
Stephen, I want you to look at the angry man. I want you to tell me what you see.
I'm trying to see him.
Stop!
Stephen,
stop!
Tell me what you see.
Stop!
Stephen.
I know who it is.
Months after Todd Schultz and Annette Cooper's dismembered bodies were found in a series of shallow graves, investigators get a big break. Under hypnosis, a witness says he saw the young lovers on the afternoon they disappeared, and they weren't alone.
Stephen, tell me what you see.
I know who he is.
This witness actually saw what he thought to be Todd and Annette forced into a car.
Forced into a car by someone he believes looked like Dale Johnston, Annette's stepfather.
So that gave the cops their eyewitness to the abduction of Todd and Annette.
With the backdrop of rumors that he'd sexually abused Annette, cops decide it's time to bring Dale in for questioning.
Why don't you tell me why I'm here?
We just want the truth, Dale. Dale, the truth about you and Annette.
I never touched.
What went on between?
I never touched her.
Annette's previous boyfriends would say that Dale Johnston was very protective of Annette and that he was also sort of jealous of any relationship she might have with other boys.
Were you jealous, Dale? Jealous of her and Todd?
Jealous? No.
Did you have a fight? Is that what happened? Did just get out of hand? Dale, did Todd get out of line?
No.
Is that what happened, Dale?
No.
Did you shoot those two kids and cut them up, Dale?
The investigation was already focused on Dale. So everybody, you know, the whole town believed Dale had killed these two kids.
He was a meat cutter at a local grocery, which also pushed the local law enforcement into thinking that if somebody was dismembered, that Dale would have been very capable of doing that.
I told you once. I'll tell you again. I was setting out hay bales on the farm. I did not kill them.
After several hours of relentless interrogation, Dale Johnston sticks to his story. He had nothing to do with the murders of Todd and Annette.
All right. That's all for tonight, Dale. Oh, it's one more thing. We have a warrant to search your house.
I got nothing to hide.
But detectives suspect Dale has plenty to hide, and they're hoping a search of his property will prove it.
Knowing that the two victims were shot, you would look for bullets, you would look for weapons.
And since Todd and Annette were also dismembered, they look for knives, too.
Sir.
That looks like a 22. Bag it and send it to ballistics, but keep looking. Almost everybody in town has a 22.
Yes, sir. Sir, does everyone in town have one of these?
Bag that too, and get the boots.
Yes, sir.
A machete and a rifle. Dale Johnston's claim of innocence is getting shakier by the minute. And soon, it totally collapses when the existence of naked photos of Annette Cooper comes to light.
Basically, the photos of Annette were with no clothes on, and they were posed pictures, some of her wearing a gun belt, some of her holding a rifle.
The photos were allegedly taken by Dale Johnston. Some say he handed them over to police himself.
He thought he was being helpful. You know, he thought he helped them identify the body parts.
Instead, it helps investigators build their case against Dale Johnston. Investigators are zeroing in on Dale Johnston as the main suspect in the murders of his stepdaughter, Annette Cooper, and her boyfriend, Todd Schultz. And when questionable photos of Annette surface, allegedly taken by Dale Johnston himself, they're all but convinced he's the killer. Police arrest Dale and charge him with two counts of aggravated murder, almost 1 year to the day after the teenagers were found slaughtered.
I think we're informed of Dale's arrest the day they were going out to the farm to arrest him. It was a relief. Finally, we're going to get some justice. Finally, things are going to happen. I had the story in my mind. I knew the motive. I knew the means. I knew how he did it. The puzzle pieces all fit for me. I believe without a shadow of a doubt, he was guilty.
Four months after his arrest, Dale Johnston goes to trial.
The state alleged that Dale Johnston kidnapped Todd and Annette in downtown Logan, forced them into his vehicle.
Todd! No!
And Dale shot the kids in the trailer, took them outside and butchered them, then loaded the body parts into feed sacks and somehow got those body parts into the river.
The defense argues that all of the evidence taken from Dale's property is circumstantial.
None of the evidence that they had recovered from Dale Johnston's house was of any evidentiary value. Some of it was circumstantial. They had taken a gun and a knife, but none of the weapons that were recovered from the search warrants matched any of the evidence that was recovered from the bodies. Nothing that they took from the residence or the vehicles linked Dale Johnston to the murders.
Even Dale himself takes the stand to profess his innocence.
The verdict came back as guilty as charged, and Dale Johnston was sentenced to death row.
When the guilty verdict came down, he didn't show any emotion. That I remember that his attorneys, their jaws dropped like, what? You know, they were astounded, as was I. But Dale was pretty stoic through it.
I believe Dale served 7 years of his sentence.
Then, in a shocking decision, the Court of Appeals grants him a new trial. His conviction is thrown out. Without new evidence or the resources to try him again, the state decides to drop the case. Instead of facing execution, Dale Johnston is now a free man, and the town of Logan is outraged.
The wounds that were healing, the scar never got a chance to be created. It was ripped open again.
Investigators are back to square one in this 8-year-old case, and with no other suspects to pursue, they're forced to turn their attention to newer, more pressing cases.
We figured justice would never be done. So I put it in God's hands. We figured that ultimately, God is going to be the judge.
The murders of Todd Schultz and Annette Cooper remain unsolved for 25 years. But in the fall of 2007, a cold case squad decides to take another look at the murders that have haunted Logan for so long.
They tried to relocate all of the evidence, and they wanted to start from scratch and to start redoing everything to make sure that all of the questions were answered properly.
Old witnesses are re-interviewed. New witnesses come forward. And one woman in particular, a Logan native named Judy Linscott, turns the case on its head during a routine visit to her parole officer.
How you going, Judy?
Great.
Judy got into trouble with the law with minor thefts or disorderly conducts, and she was placed on probation through the local courts.
Been looking for a job, Judy?
Doing the best I can.
You staying clean?
Doing the best I can.
Well, it looks like you've been staying out of trouble. I wanted to stay that way, Judy.
Judy's parole officer was part of the original investigation into Todd and Annette's murders. And though it's been years since he was actively involved in the case, the grisly killings are never far from his thoughts.
He took it upon himself to talk to as many people as he could to see if anything new was coming up with the homicide again.
But when he asks Judy Linscott if she remembers anything about the murders, he's stunned by her response.
I might know a thing or two.
Go on.
Back when the murders happened, Judy was married to Kenny Linscott, a petty criminal who was known around town for dealing drugs out of his house. According to Judy, on the afternoon Todd and Annette went missing, people were in and out of the Linscott house, partying all day long.
You remember who?
Oh, the usual Tex Bill. Some guy named Chester.
Now who's Chester?
Who knows? Assuming he was some guy he did drugs with.
Judy tells her parole officer that at one point, Kenny and the stranger she only remembers as Chester left the house. They were gone for hours, and her husband Kenny came home alone.
But when he came home, he had a big old cut on his arm, and he was covered in blood. Cut clear to the bone, I tell you. I asked him what happened, and he said, shut it. So I did.
Why didn't you tell anyone?
I did.
Back in 1982, Judy found Kenny's cut suspicious enough that she called the cops to report it.
So he showed up and he'd been bleeding? Okay, I will pass this on to a detective.
They never explored it because they concentrated too much on Dale Johnston. I mean, they even had Kenny Linscott calling before the bodies were found, asking if they had found anything, which I would have thought would have been rather odd, considering that at that point they hadn't found the bodies yet.
Can I go now?
Yeah, Judy, you can go. And Judy, thank you.
Now, 25 years after the murders, investigators decide to talk to Kenny Linscott himself to see what he remembers.
Kenny! Kenny Linscott.
Yeah.
I'm a special investigator with the prosecutor's office. You got a minute?
I guess. What's up?
Look, Kenny, I know it's a long time back, but I have to ask you about Annette and Todd, them kids that was killed back in 82 in the woods.
I know who they are.
Yeah. Let's talk about a phone call you made. You see, it says you called the cops asking if they'd found any bodies yet. Right?
What of it?
Well, that was 5 days before they were found, and we didn't even know they were dead yet, Kenny. So I guess I'm wondering, why did you call the cops asking if they'd found any bodies?
I got nothing left to say to you.
But the detective isn't done with Kenny yet.
Kenny.
He wants to know more about the mysterious man he partied with that day, known to his ex-wife Judy as Chester.
Does the name Chester mean anything to you?
With further digging, they discovered that Chester is Chester McKnight, a lifelong criminal who was known to stop through Logan from time to time.
He was more further south down towards Athens, Ohio. But he had stayed in Logan once in a while at a place called the Animal House, which it's like a flop house for a bunch of drug addicts.
It doesn't take long to track down Chester.
Chester was in prison for his third time. His third conviction was for a child predator sting.
I had never heard of the name Chester McKnight prior to this. Didn't know him, didn't know who he was, didn't know anything about him.
But investigators are about to discover a lot about Chester McKnight and get answers to questions that have tormented the town of Logan, Ohio for a quarter of a century.
But then when I lay in bed and everything, you know, I think about it.
25 years after the murder and mutilation of teenagers Annette Cooper and Todd Schultz, a new team of investigators has zeroed in on two new suspects, Kenny Linscott, a native of Logan, Ohio, and Chester McKnight, a drifter who was known to be in Logan on the day of the killings.
It became known that Chester was part of a burglary ring where he and Kenny Linscott were partners.
Now in prison for an unrelated crime, investigators pay him a visit and ask him what he remembers about that sunny afternoon in October of 1982.
What was going on there? We was partying, drinking, drugging.
Just 24 years old at the time, Chester says he and 21-year-old Kenny Linscott had been partying for the entire day.
What kind of drugs are you talking about? Oh, pot, LSD. A little bit PCP.
And so it came to a certain point where you guys decided to leave together.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the reason for leaving? Why were you guys leaving together?
Just to get out.
Okay.
Going stir crazy.
We never did get an exact or detailed report on what transpired that evening. I believe maybe Todd and Annette were walking, maybe seeing Chester and Kenny.
Woo! Look who it is! Annette. And Todd.
Hey, Kenny.
What are you two doing out here?
We're just going out for a walk. We're heading home.
Nah. Party's just getting started. Annette, right?
Chester goes on to tell detectives that he immediately set his sights on Annette Cooper.
Did you have it in your mind to force her into some kind of sexual act?
Yes.
Okay. You want to get high?
No. No, we've got to get going.
We got to go. All right.
You got to go? Huh?
Yeah.
You can go wherever you want. She's staying here.
Todd Schultz did everything he could to protect his girlfriend. But in the end, it wasn't enough.
What are you gonna do?
All right.
Annette,
stop, run.
Stop. Go.
Annette, just go!
Head up to that clearing.
Run!
In the final moments of the chase, with the two crazed young thugs closing in, Todd finds himself staring down the barrel of a .22 caliber gun.
No!
No! No! No! No! No!
Shut her up, Kitty!
Please don't do it! No, 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 no!
Chester shot Todd several times in the head.
No!
Kenny!
No!
Step away!
No! No! Please.
And according to Chester, leaving a witness was not an option.
Please, no. No.
At that point, the only thing that Chester remembers was that Kenny left, went back up to his house, came back with a knife and a machete, and they began dismembering the bodies.
The motive for the dismemberment? Nothing more than a drug-fueled attempt to get rid of the evidence.
These were not done by anyone who butchered or knew what they were doing. They were hacked.
Chester McKnight pled guilty and pled to a life sentence in the Ohio prison systems, and that's where he'll spend the rest of his natural life.
As for Kenny Linscott, he was charged with first-degree murder,
Kenny.
But he never confessed.
Kenny, you have a right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to an attorney. And if you can't afford one, well, they'll get one for you, Kenny.
Kenny's lawyer got what I call the deal of the millennium. He got a first-degree murder charge reduced to misdemeanor abuse of a corpse. And that's what Kenny pleaded guilty to.
He had already spent 6 months in jail waiting for this trial to happen. So he'd already served his time. He got to go home. Kenny Linscott passed away in this past year. Kenny had had some surgery on his legs. And one morning he began to bleed and they were unable to revive him and he died. He reaped what he sowed.
They were innocent victims. They were in the wrong place at the wrong time, and that I think a sexual pervert took advantage of what situation he had, and everything got out of hand, and it escalated to the point where both Todd and Annette lost their lives. It's a big waste. It's a big waste of life.
He robbed two young adults of their lives. He robbed two families of their loved ones. That's what murder is. It's taking that which does not belong to you and taking all that anyone else has.